Get exclusive content you just can't wait to hear. Hit us with your feedback. We want to know how you feel. So download Bashani Radio. Get it free from the App Store. Download Bashani Radio. See our features and much more. Download the Bashani Radio app for free now.
Introducing MakeRealWealth.com /N Johnson. Financial literacy, making wealth real. Home of the instant pay raise. Enrich your life. Learn how thousands of people around the world are experiencing life to the fullest. MakeRealWealth.com /N Johnson.
Welcome to Verkay Radio, iHeartRadio. This is the Power of Women on the Get Your Business Right show. You know who I am. I'm the Mr. Broadcastpreneur, a.k.a. the Fearless Coach Michael Muse, and the author of Rise and Burn and From Pain to Power. I'm excited and delighted because when you meet people who are changing the world, who take their passion, who take their ideas, who take their dreams, and they put it in motion, and they allow it to touch one heart at a time, one soul at a time, and make every place they go a better place. This particular young lady here today, she says, you know what? I don't want to make no change just on the local level. She says she wants to change the world. She has started organizations from business incubation to nonprofits from domestic violence. She's spoken in Nigeria, Ghana, Senegal, South Africa, UK, Singapore, spoken with the Nigerian Belize Chamber of Council, the Aspera Conference, the Anti-Corruption Workshop, the Universal Peace Foundation, the Nordica Clinic, and various embassies of health, education, women affairs, youth, and special programs, and foreign affairs, even the National Assembly and state and House of Representatives. And I'm not talking about House of Representatives in the United States. I'm talking about the various countries in Africa. So she's on the ground. She is touching lives, and she's allowing people to see that if you've been beaten, bruised, or battered, you can make a better chance for your life, that you don't have to be stuck. So if you feel like you're stuck, you need to hear who this is. This is Miss Felicia Henderson.
Hi, how are you? Good morning, everyone.
Great morning. How are you doing?
I am amazing. It's a wonderful day. We have another day to live. We woke up this morning. That's another opportunity to change a life and impact this world. I believe in empowering lives, motivating nation, and creating global bridges. So every day we wake up, it's a chance to make this world better than it was before.
Absolutely. You are truly an inspiring person.
Thank you.
From the first time when I first saw you on Facebook and just seeing that you were making the ultimate effort to change the world around you. And when you started your foundation and you saw that it's important that someone is a voice for those who don't have a voice, that was important for someone to speak up for those who are going through domestic violence, someone who's going through situations where they feel they can't get out of. I want to just jump right into it. When did you first realize how important it was to start your nonprofit and to tackle domestic violence?
Wow. Okay. Well, I think I was born a humanitarian, to tell you the goodness, the honest to God truth. I can't remember a time when I didn't live the life of a humanitarian, either of my own accord or vicariously through my mom because she was a Southern belle. She was okay. from Mississippi.
She's from Mississippi, yeah. my daddy yeah, home, home state. Okay.
yeah. Absolutely. So, yes. So being growing up with a Southern upbringing, my mother raised me in the Midwest. And so we were that house that everyone always came to. There was always a meal on the table. There was always, it was always an open door and everyone was always welcome. So I grew up, though I was a very shy child, I grew up with this community, this communal kind of feel in my home. So when I was in high school, I would do things like we would have blood drives and we would, you know, do things like that. Or, you know, we would have car washes at church to raise money. We were always looking for things to do so that we could give back in society. So fast forward, I became an adult. And I remember as a child telling my mom, when I grow up, I'm going to live in Africa. But to me, that living in Africa was wild America. Right. It was in the safaris, right.
So,
you know.
Right. So when you so during this time, you were watching your mom because obviously your mom was a pivotal point, and you seeing the need, to serve people and to being a humanitarian. So
absolutely.
So like you say, she will always have food at the home. And so was she just feeding the people in the neighborhood or was she having the homeless people come by? So just kind of be a little descriptive.
Okay. So what would happen is like, well, we grew up in the hood. I'm just going to keep it real. We grew up in the hood. And so everybody wasn't as lucky as to have, you know, all the things that I may have had in my home. And my mother... My mother was, she was considered to be disabled because she had a bad heart. So my mother had her little side hustle where she would work in this restaurant and she would cook and this guy would pay my mom under the table. But after she got paid under the table, my mother used to bring this food home or when her day was closed and we would go to work with her sometimes on the weekends or after school. When I was old enough, I would catch the bus with my brother and we'd go over to her job. So in the evenings, my mother wouldn't throw the food away. She gave the food away.
Mm.
Yes. And when we were home, we never had leftovers in our house because obviously, when you've got kids, kids have friends and kids know they gravitate to where they're going to get a meal or where they're going to have fun or where they feel safe. So there were always kids in our house. And so my mom always, I only have a brother, so we're only two. But she would cook these massive meals and kids. I think we had so many friends because my mother was such a good cook.
Yeah, they say, shoot, I got to be Felicia's friend. I mean, I don't have to eat no Spam tonight. I give me a good home-cooked meal at Felicia's house. Her mama can cook.
Tell me about it. And it wasn't just food. So, like, when Christmas came around, my mother, like most moms, my mother made things happen at Christmas. We never had a bad Christmas. Mm. And now, the thing about my mom, though, is if you get what you want and you don't value it, then you don't want it. So at Christmas, we would have these amazing Christmases opening up gifts. And then by New Year's, we barely had anything because if we didn't play with it, it disappeared. Right. And it didn't disappear into the garbage. But if another friend came over and they seemed to like it and play with it, like my mother expected us to play with it, she'd be like, oh, don't worry about it. You can have that, baby. Go ahead and take that with you. Right. So I learned as a child not to associate value on things, but to associate value in the feeling that you got from giving things to people, you know?
Right.
And as little as we may have thought that we had, when I look back, I realized we had maybe more than others and they appreciated it. And, right. and she didn't do it in a way that they felt bad about it. So not only did you learn the spirit of giving, but you learned empathy. You learned how to connect with people and talk to them and do things with them in a way that they didn't feel put down or less than. Mm-hmm. My mother made everybody feel good about themselves. She had this infectious laugh that you had to hear it to love it. It was crazy. And most of my friends remember my mom because of the way she laughed. And she was a teeny tiny something, just 5'1". And literally, because of my mother, my nonprofit, The Way Foundation, started. And I actually have a scholarship fund dedicated to her called the Mama May Fund. And it's for people who suffer from cardiac issues. And it was created because of her. My mom's name was Mayola Henderson. And the most amazing woman I could ever think of on this earth brought me here. So,
You know what that reminds me? Your mom reminds me a lot of Maya Angelou's quote. When she says, it's not what you do for people that's important. I'm kind of paraphrasing, but it's how you make them feel. People never forget how you make them feel.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And your mom laid a powerful footprint in your soul on how important it is to people feel good regardless of their circumstances. I'm sure when they came to your home, like you said, they may have come hungry. They could have easily went somewhere else and might have felt embarrassed, felt ashamed, but didn't feel that way when they came around your mom. They know they're going to get a good meal, good conversation, and they're going to hear that laugh.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And my mother was that communal mom. She didn't care.
They were all her babies.
If you needed a whooping, you were getting a whooping, whatever. And she'll whoop you, and she'll call your mama and tell your mama, yeah, I just did so and so and so and so. He on his way home. She on her way home. she was just a little powerhouse. I mean, my mother, I think you're absolutely right. My mother laid the foundation in me on what I felt society should be like, or the world should be like, because my mother was a giver. And I guess when I look at myself, I aspire to be like her. I aspire to emulate her, be able to give as much love as she gives, and to touch people as much as she was able to touch them in the simplest and smallest way. And my mother also taught me that the more you give, the more blessings you receive. Not that you give in expectation of something in return, even a blessing, but that when you give truly and purely from your heart, that you will always be blessed. Because like I said, my mother was disabled by the system, I mean, because of her heart problems, but we never suffered. We never lacked for anything. Mm. And I'm sure that that's because my mother was always giving of herself, of her resources, of everything. And not only was she giving, but she was so welcoming. She accommodated everyone. She loved everybody. So, yeah.
That is powerful right there. And so you go from watching this very strong, vicarious woman who implanted so much into you.
Yes.
And you're honoring her by sharing that same spirit with the world now. I think that is the one thing in life that people fail to realize, that when we do lose someone in the physical plane, but when we live out their attributes and those characteristics who made them who they are. And in your case, you know, having a fund dedicated to her name, she still lives on.
Absolutely.
So there's nothing about her memory that's gone. And that's a testament on how important it is that she, in one sense, with you and your work, with her work, she was known just in Chicago. Not through you, she's going to be known globally.
Absolutely. That's so very true.
And it doesn't get no better than that.
It does not. It does not. And I have to say, we've been making quite a few strides globally. I mean, we've done so many things. The WAE Foundation, which actually stands for True Health and Empowerment for Women and Aspiring Youth Foundation, was founded in Africa. And
before you get there, I want you to share with us the story on how you began to go to Africa, because the fact of the matter is, and the truth, most African American women are not looking to go to Africa. They're not looking to go there to move. They're not looking to go there to do mission work. So how did the whole, you did, I remember you mentioned that you had a conversation with your mom about going to Africa. So take us from that conversation until you, take us to that conversation until you actually make the decision to go, and take us there.
Okay. So now that's really weird as well, because I think that in life, we all have a purpose. Even when I was in Africa, people were like, well, how did you end up in my country? And I always crack a joke. I say, by a plane. How'd you go? Well, how'd you come here? I'm like, by a plane. And they're like, what? I'm like, yeah, I did. I didn't walk. But the truth of the matter is, I think that each and every one of us has a destination in life. We have some place that we're going.
Right. Yes.
We have something that we were created to do. And I think that before I was created, it was ordained that I would return home to Africa in order to do, I still don't really know the true thing that I'm supposed to do, but in order to impact lives, empower people, put them in a position where they can create a better life for themselves. I know that for a fact, because that's what every program that I create is initiated to do. That's the fundamental source of it, to give a better life, to give hope, to inspire, to motivate those who I consider to be at risk. And I think that in life, we're all the same. We all are the same. We share one common thread, and that's our human frailty. We all have the same hopes, the same fears, and the same desires. We question ourselves, what have we done?
Yes.
How will we be remembered? And have we done well? Have we left our families and our loved ones the things that they need to be successful? That's every human being desire. I don't care where you are, what you do, what your education is. It might be dressed or clothed a different way, but when you break it down, it's the same fundamental desire and the same fear, because we're all the same.
Yes.
So I say I was created, and it was ordained before I was born, that I would return home to Africa. So when I was that child and I said to my mom, I'm going to go live in Africa. I didn't even know what Africa was, because I thought Africa was like America. You know, we're United States, we're a continent, but we're one country. So I looked at Africa as a young child in my innocence as like the United States. It's a continent, but it's one country. I didn't know there was an Angola, a Nigeria, a Liberia, South Africa.
Right.
I had no clue. When you looked at television, it just said Africa. So whatever it was, if it was Ethiopia, it just said Africa. It wasn't until later that I realized, well, this is where these people are from, and this is where these people are from. So when I told my mom I was going to live in Africa, theoretically, I was going to live in the Safari Sahara.
Exactly.
I wanted to go live with lions and tigers and zebras and elephants.
You was ready to go hunt. Had your hunting gear on.
That's what I was drawn to. That's what I was drawn to. I was drawn to the beauty of Africa. The at the time I didn't see it as resources, but the resources, the heart of the continent. And I was drawn to the people, to the images. Although the images to some people were sad, they weren't sad to me. They were like magnets that I just wanted to see them. I wanted to touch them. I wanted to feel them. I wanted to make them feel better.
Yes.
You know, I wanted to hold those little babies. I that's what I wanted. And so that's what I told my mom. So then as I got older, I began to realize, growing up in Chicago, you think everyone who is brown like you is just like you. So I sounded different because I grew up in Los Angeles, so I didn't have that Chicago kind of accent.
You didn't have that Chicago twang, huh?
I didn't have that Chicago twang. I had that West Coast kind of Valley girl mixed in with Chicago and then a little bit of Mississippi country. And so I was a little bit of a mixture. So because I didn't sound like the Black people or the African-American people that I was around, when I would meet other brown people who didn't sound like them, I just figured, well, they must have lived somewhere else too. I didn't realize that these people that I was meeting that had a different type of accent were African, because I assumed all brown people in America are all the same.
Right.
Okay. Except you were Hispanic, but I could tell you're Hispanic because you look different, you know. But these other brown people were looking like me. So I thought all of these African-American people that I made friends with over my life were African-American like me, as in ex-slave lineage, that type of thing. And it wasn't until later as I grew up that I began to understand that these people that I was that I made friends with, that I was drawn to, not the people that I just had to go to school with or just had to live in the neighborhoods with. Obviously, right. They were African-American, vast majority African-American like me. But when I realized that when I chose a friend, they were brown like me, but they were African. Mm. And I couldn't understand it. It wasn't until like my junior or senior year in high school that I realized that most of the friends I chose were African friends. And so that's when I began to realize the differences. And I guess I would say I would define myself as having an immigrant spirit, because I love new things. I love new cultures. I love different types of food. I love hearing different languages. They sound like music to me. I love hearing the various stories, especially the African stories. And again, this goes back to, I think that innately, we're all created for something. I was created to be attracted to those things about Africa because I was supposed to go home. Mm. That's just it. So you
found that very early.
Well, 16, 17, 18. Yeah.
That's still young, but to be at that age and you realize that you have a kindred spirit with a place you haven't even been to yet. And that just shows how powerful the spirit is. But real quick, it's time for us to take a quick break.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yes.
We're back on the Get Your Business Right show on Verkay Radio, iHeartRadio, and on every platform a podcast can be played on. We're here with Felicia Henderson, and she is really the servant of service and a humanitarian. And she's sharing how important service is to our fellow man and from a local scale and even on a grander global scale. And she is sharing how her experience and just being connected with Africa has ignited a purpose in her that is unshakable. And so, Felicia, we're just glad to have you here with us, because you are truly sharing where a lot of people right now who would love to be in your shoes. When I say be in your shoes, having such a God-given purpose to touch the various hearts and souls around the world. And so let's talk about when you made your first trip to Africa. What countries did you go to, and what inspired you about those specific countries?
Well, the first country I went to, I actually went to break up somebody's wedding. First country I went to was Nigeria. And I went there because a friend of mine was getting married. And I didn't want her to marry the guy. So I was, of course, going to debunk the guy so that she could marry the guy that I wanted her to marry, who was still a Nigerian, but he was my friend. And so, of course, he was better.
And I'm going to assume that your friend wanted to marry her too, right?
Yes, my friend was okay. in love with her.
Okay.
Yes, he was. And I'm loyal to a fault. I mean, like, I'm that ride or die friend. I'm going to do whatever. So I went all the way to Africa to prove to her that this guy wasn't the guy for her. But of course, you know us women, what we want is what we want. And there's no deterring us. So it was a good and a bad trip, obviously. She married the gentleman, which meant it was bad for my friend. But the great thing was I found out where home was for me. Yes. I found out I got the first true validation of all these feelings inside of me. I remember I had to fly through New York. And I thank goodness, because growing up in Chicago is, you know, obviously a pretty big city, but as an adult, I lived in Naperville. So I wasn't in the city pretty much anymore. And Chicago is vastly different than New York. Vastly different.
It's a wannabe almost to a degree.
No, there's no.
It's the Midwest version.
No, but there's no, New York is just a whole different culture. It's a whole different culture. If you're not used to that kind of aggressive, you know, I mean, everybody is focused on what they need to do. It's a very intense place. And so I wasn't used to that. Chicago wasn't that intense. It was more really kind of laid back. And then obviously Naperville was. So I'm getting there. I was a little overwhelmed. And so when I went to the embassy, because I had to go to New York to get my my visa. When I went to the embassy, the ambassador was like, when you get there, I should let him know, because he obviously wanted to make sure that I was safe because it was my first trip going into the country. And So when I arrived there in Lagos is where I landed. I will say I left in the middle of fall. So I went from cool to nice summer weather. When I got off the plane, I was like, "Ooh, I love this." The weather was just amazing. Absolutely.
Yes.
And then what I saw was all of these colors, because they wear what this kind of material is called Ankara. And it's just multicolored. And I just felt like for the first time in my life, I was seeing the colors that are in the crayon box.
Yes.
The way they were meant to be. Like, I mean, you saw color combinations that you would never see people wear over here that were, I mean, they were just, I mean, you saw reds with yellow, splashing greens with oranges. And it was just amazing. This plethora of color that was just like this rainbow of brown people surrounded by color. And it was just the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. And the way they welcomed you. I mean, Africans are some of the most hospitable people you could ever meet. I know they have a bad rep, but they are some of the most hospitable and kind people. That Southern hospitality thing that we know of, when you are a foreigner coming into their place, they embrace you that same type of way. And so it was an amazing experience for me. It really was. And it made me want to know more. How can I be a part of that? And so I started going and coming. I was going like 2 to 3 times a year. I would come back, bring things back with me, bring videos, bring movies. And then one day I just had this aha moment. I want to live there. But at the time, my mother was still alive and she was very sick. And I knew I couldn't take her with me. And so I couldn't leave the country,
right,
obviously, until she passed away. So after I lost my mom, I think within 3 months I had purchased my family's one-way tickets to Nigeria. Because I just felt like I just wanted to be home. I wanted to be in a place where I felt a part of it. I felt like I could make a difference. I felt like I could use what I was and who I was and what I had to make a difference in the lives of people. And so from Nigeria, I started going to other countries, Tanzania, South Africa, South Sudan, Ghana, the Gambia, Senegal, Niger Republic, just traveled and, right. and saw this continent and saw the resources that were there and saw the opportunities that were there. Yes. I mean, there's so many opportunities for business, not just for business, but for making a change in someone's life on any level. If you want to make an impact in education, you can do it. If you want to make a impact in microeconomic development or building small businesses, you can do it. There's so much room. If you want to make an impact on development as far as infrastructural housing and things like that, you can do it. Anything you choose to take right. there, because it's like, I won't say it's like virgin, because it's not virgin. It's the original, but there's so much room to improve.
Yes, that's right.
And they're so open and willing to accept. If you want to come in and bring something good, they're willing to listen to you and hear what you have to say because they want their lives to be better. You know, the one thing I can say is, I think the thing that made me fall most in love with Africa is their undying belief that there is hope tomorrow. Tomorrow will be better. Tomorrow can be better. And in a place where you have an ideology that is synonymous with hopelessness, I was surprised to see the amount of hope beyond a mustard seed. I mean, it was like a watermelon. It wasn't even a watermelon seed. It was like a watermelon. That's how much hope they had on just the idea that tomorrow could be better. They placed everything in it.
That's right. Well, you know, Felice, it's time for us to talk about the most important, one of the most important things right now is your WAVE Foundation, because you're truly taking the lead on helping so many men and women and children who are dealing with rape, financial, emotional, and physical abuse, bullying, PTSD, and even mass school shootings, incest, suicide, and more. And so what prompts you to start your foundation for that particular area?
Okay, so the WAVE Foundation, like I said, was created to impact the lives of the world's at risk or vulnerable citizens. And that's obviously, it's considered to be women, youth, and children. In Africa, you see so many things happening. You have so many programs. While I was there, there was something that took place in Nigeria, in fact, where a bunch of girls were kidnapped and they were taken into the Sambisa forest and we couldn't find them. They were taken from their school. And so many other things have happened as actions of oppression, as actions of violence against people who couldn't protect themselves on so many different levels. And then when I started engaging with my friend and sister here, Arlene Major, we had an issue where she was a victim of domestic violence and she had a project that she was working on called 50 Shades of right. Violence. And so because of that, 50 Shades of Blue, rather, because of that, I got engaged with her because I believed in that cause. Right. And we started working together and we started working together. And over time, it evolved because in the interim, I came back to the United States. And me being here in the United States, I was here on assignment for 50 weeks for a company that I worked for. I lost 7 people. And I lost them to various things. I lost them to suicide. I lost them to violence, other types of violence. I lost them to domestic violence. I lost some to cancer. And then I started correlating that there's something happening. There's something going on. And I started seeing all these school shootings. There will be one, and then there will be another one. And they'll be, I'm like, why is this happening? What's going on? And I started analyzing these things. And I started doing research, and I realized that violence has been taking such a shape and such a form. And it's growing at an exponential level, and no one is addressing it, really addressing it. Yes, right. We talk about domestic violence, but we look at a Band-Aid. We don't look for a solution. And then I started realizing, well, there are other people that are being affected by violence. What are we going to do? And so we mm-hmm. came up with this project called 50 Shades of Survival. And that was, it was, you know, because of the 50 Shades of Blue. And so we started working on that, and that focused on all victims of violence, all survivors, because I don't like to look at people as victims. I think that every day you wake up, it's another survive. Day that you survive.
Yes.
Yes. It's another opportunity to break those chains and build a new life for yourself if you have the courage. And my job is to give you that courage, to help you find the resources for that, and to help other survivors come forward and talk about their experiences. Because again, I you'll always hear me refer to the fact that we share the same human frailty. We share the same fears. We have the same issues. We go through the same trials and tribulations.
Yes.
People look at us and they think we're better than superhuman, a superhero. We're all real life superheroes in our own way, even in our failures. The fact that you can stand up from your failure makes you a superhero. Mm. Because there are some people who fall down and they don't get up. They can't get up. But the fact that you failed and you stood up and said, I'm going to try again. We're going to do this one more time. I'm scared. It might not work. I might not get out of it, but I'm going to keep trying. I'm going to keep knocking on this door. I'm going to keep banging on this window. I'm going to keep doing whatever I need to do. Makes you a superhero. It makes you a survivor. So yes. Telling our stories, and, you know, I talk about it as telling our stories because in life we say there's 6 degrees of separation. I don't know if you remember there was a movie about that.
Yes, I remember that movie. Yes. Separation.
Mm-hmm. Right. But in reality, when it comes to violence, there's 1 degree, because I can guarantee you that someone that you know is a victim, has been a victim, or knows someone who has been of violence. So we are all connected in this monster, because it's the only thing in this world that does not discriminate. It doesn't care about your socioeconomic status, your gender, your sex, how much money you make, what your education level is, what type of job you have, where you live in the world, your age. It cares about nothing. All it wants to do is consume and create a bigger environment to be perpetuated in. And it's cyclic. So, and the reason it's able to be perpetuated is because it's a secret.
Yes.
It's perpetuated by silence. It's built and it's enshrined in shame.
So what you're saying, the more people who are silent is given the aggressor more power to continue doing what they're doing.
Absolutely. And the aggressor is not a person. It's the action. It's the violence itself. You know, it's like this. You know how they say, I tell people that fire is alive. And if you think about the way they talk about it, they tell you stop, drop, and roll. When something is on fire, you have to smother the fire. That means it's living. It breathes. It's the same thing for violence. But the thing that perpetuated, that gives it life, is that silence. And the sad part is, the silence isn't always formed by fear, which is what most people think, that victims live in fear. It's not. Most times their prison isn't fear. Most times their prison is love. Their prison is loyalty. Their prison is shame. Those three things right there have a stronger chain than fear. Mm. when you love someone, when you're loyal to something, or when you yourself feel shame and less than,
yes,
it's hard to admit or to expose because it hurts.
Yes.
Fear hurts in a different way. It hurts from the outside in, but the other ones hurt from the inside out.
Mm.
So it's a very difficult thing. And the only way to break those chains is when you let someone understand that they're not alone. This isn't just their burden. There's someone exactly like them that has gone through the same thing. And they made it.
That's right. And you know, I'm glad you said they made it, because I believe right now you have a campaign that you're looking to help people who are with Leaf Effort over in Bahamas. Am I correct?
We've got two efforts going on right now. One just came up recently because of Dorian. We're engaging people to give. I'm locally here in Houston, but we've got satellite areas where we have supporters and members of my organization in various cities. And we want to get those relief efforts together, get those things together, blankets, drinking water, generators, flashlight, clothing, non-perishable food items, so that we can do a road trip, because we want to go down there. No, we can't get to the Bahamas, but we can get as close as possible and get them over to people who are going into those areas to deliver these resources. So that's just come up in the last couple of weeks. But before that, we have our 50 Shades of Survival. And we right now have a project running where we're trying to impact the lives of at least 300 survivors and put a smile on their face. So between the months of October, which is the beginning of Domestic Violence Awareness Month, all the way until the end of the year, we want to try and hit, again, several key cities. And if you want us to get into your city, we're more than happy to, because the more lives we're able to impact, the better. We just want to give hope to survivors and let them know that there is someone who understands, someone who recognizes the challenges that they face every day, and that's here and ready to fight for them and fight with them. My organization empowers survivors to empower other survivors, because I believe that only a survivor can really help a survivor, because they've been there.
That's right.
Now, and we also have a special thing going on right now where we're targeting men who are survivors. We created two new programs, one called FAST, Fathers Are Survivors Too, and one called HOME, His Only Means of Escape. And that's because a lot of men are survivors, but they, because of the situation that they're in, they can't step forward because they've already been in a position where they are emasculated. They're made to feel that they are less than a man because they're being abused by this woman, perhaps the mother of their children. And they love her, but they can't change who she is.
Right.
And they can't leave because they don't want to leave their children. Or they can't leave because perhaps people don't realize that there are several types of abuse. There's obviously, yes, physical abuse, but then you have mental, emotional, and financial abuse. They can't leave because they don't have clothes on their back, because their clothes have been burned, or they've lost their job because every time they go to work, she bust out the car window, slashed their tires. And so now they don't have a job anymore. You know, how do they get out of this situation? If they call the police or something like that, most often the men in these situations are seen, even though they are the person that is calling, they're seen as the agitator initially until someone listens. So when the police arrive on the scene, they're pulled to the side, they're put in handcuffs, they're being checked, and they're the person who was being abused.
Exactly.
If they go to social services and say, hey, look, I'm a father, I need help, I've got my children, it's not as likely that they would get the same support as a woman because they're a man, and it's understood that they should be able to get out there and hustle. Well, how do they get out there and hustle when they don't have a child care provider? They don't have daycare for their children. They don't have a safe roof over their head. Most shelters that are set up for men aren't set up to accommodate a man with children.
That's right.
You know? Where do they go?
You're right. Felicia, we're getting very close to the end of the show here. If you can, just share what's the one big reason a person should consider donating, whether their time, money, or resources to the WAVE Foundation, and how could they get in contact with you?
Well, I think the main reason that anyone should consider joining hands with the WAVE Foundation to either support our initiatives, volunteer their time, give their resources, or even share our stories is because we are all our brother's keepers.
Yes.
We are all real life superheroes, and we can all be ordinary people doing extraordinary things. I think that we should all experience in our lifetime the satisfaction that comes from impacting the life of another person. If people want to reach out to me, they can reach us on our email, which is the way.foundation@yahoo.com, or you can find me in LinkedIn. I'm Felicia Henderson. You can go to my Facebook page, which is obviously the same Felicia Henderson, or you can catch me also at Miss Feliviz. That's MZFELIVIZ. And my nonprofits page is The Way to Inspire. So, you know, you can go there and just type in The Way, the number 2, and Inspire, and it'll pull up the website. I am always available to talk. And the biggest thing is I'm looking to engage with other people who want to give back. So yes. If you think you want to create something in your community, I'm here to help you. If you thought about starting a nonprofit or thought about how can you give back in your community and you don't know what to do, reach out to me. I am more than willing to help because I think that each and every one of us has something to give back, whether it's being a role model and a motivator, whether it's being that person that provides food or goes and reads to children, whatever it is, whatever your passion is, I am here to help you figure out how to use that to touch the lives of someone else.
Absolutely. Well, Felicia, you are definitely my superhero. I love what you're doing. And to get your business right show, we will do everything we can to partner and work with you, because when it comes to changing lives and helping people to live a better life, you are making it happen. And we are excited about you. We're excited about your initiative. We're excited about you making this place a better world and continuing your mother's legacy.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes. So, ladies and gentlemen, there we have it. You have had the fabulous world changer, humanitarian, Felicia Henderson with us today on the Get Your Business Right show on Verkay Radio, iHeartRadio, and on every platform a podcast can be played. And we're excited you have come with us because Verkay is about the power of women, and Felicia is exemplary of the power of women here today. And so I want to thank you, Felicia, for coming on. And I want to thank each and every one of you who are listening. Because guess what? Without you, there is no me. God loves you. I love you. There's nothing you can do about it. You have a fantastic day.
Thank you. You have a great one, too.
Completely redesigned Bashani Radio app is hotter than ever. Now you can binge listen your favorite podcast show. And for those listeners that like to talk trash, excuse me, I mean give feedback. Just tap our new feedback button and run your mouth for 60 seconds. Download free for iPhone and Android in the App Store or listen online at BashaniRadio.com.